Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
It's Allie with the Hollywood Life podcast, and Bonnie is on vacay. So I have my colleague and friend and fellow redheaded queen, Alyssa Norwin, here with me today. And we are going to get into all of the entertainment things. Also, she recaps The Bachelor for us on HollywoodLife.com. So if you haven't read our recaps, make sure you do that every Monday night, and we will chat a little bit about that today. But to kick it off, Alyssa, I want to talk about the Grammys.
Of course.
Yes. So we were both up watching very late.
Way past my bedtime, let me just tell you.
Way past the bedtime. And also, I don't know if you know this, but for some reason, they had all of us who were in like the press room sign on at 3.
So you're just sitting on your computer.
I was sitting on my computer because everyone listening, there's a pre-Grammy show that does pretty much 90 to probably 95% of the award announcements, and then the rest happen on the show, and the rest is 12, and yeah, it takes 4.5-5 hours. The pre-show takes like 2 hours, and it's like 100
awards.
Back to back. They just have one person come out and just like announce them all. You get like 10 seconds to come up on stage. Like, it's very fast. But I was watching that because people were coming in the press room. And so, yeah, 3 o'clock to 12 o'clock was my Sunday.
Thank you for covering it for us. You crushed it, of course.
No, it was so fun though.
The Grammys are obviously always going to be one of the more like fun award shows because they have their performances mixed in. But 4 hours was a little pushing it on a Sunday night.
Yeah. And also I kind of felt like the performances, I mean, while I really loved watching them and stuff, they weren't really like related to the big awards of the night. So yeah, Harry Styles performed, Brandi Carlile performed, and then, you know, Luke Combs, like there was like some, of course there was the amazing hip hop medley. But like, where was Adele, Beyonce, and Taylor? Like,
I feel like that's who everyone was talking about in the audience, but we had to just base everything off of what they were doing sitting in the crowd because they never went on stage.
Exactly. They never went on stage. They never performed, and they were nominated. I mean, Lizzo also gave an amazing performance, but these three were like the biggest nominees of the night. Yeah. Beyonce had 9 nominations. Adele and Taylor Swift, I think, were tied with like 7 and 8, or like had 7 and 8, something like that. And Taylor didn't go on stage once. She didn't win.
No, I probably would have preferred Taylor just singing All Too Well 10-minute version 500 times over 4 hours as opposed to the other stuff sometimes.
I know. I didn't get it whatsoever. But, you know, I think that another big question of the night, though, which we waited the 4.5 hours for, was Album of the Year, which ultimately went to Harry. What did you think about the award? Did you think that Harry deserved it?
Okay, here's how I feel about it. I feel like I probably like Harry Styles and Beyonce equally. They're not like my top favorite artists. I like respect them as musicians and everything they do. I think they're great for pop culture and for the music industry in general. So I'm not like favoring one over the other in either way going in. I obviously knew Beyonce was the favored person to win this award going into the night. But I kind of feel like a little bad for Harry just because of like the negative response that there's been to him winning. Like, yeah, I know we all wanted Beyonce to win. I can respect that. But like, that doesn't mean that Harry deserves it any less.
Totally agree. And we're really similar in this. Like when people were screaming from the rafters, like booing and like saying it should have been Beyonce. Like nothing is worse than, and Taylor Swift knows best, nothing is worse. Right. Than somebody telling you you don't deserve something when it's like a massive moment in your life and you've worked just as hard,
yeah,
you know, than And yeah, like that was really upsetting. That was sad. I mean,
I'm trying to put myself in the shoes of someone who's like a huge Beyonce fan, which is me with Taylor Swift. Like,
right.
Obviously when she lost in 2014 or whatever year it was for Red, that was like, as a fan, like kind of devastating. Like you really wanted her to win. You knew how much she poured into that album. But like, I don't think I would stand up in a crowd and boo someone else who's winning album of the year for the first time in their life.
Right. Exactly. And not to mention the fact, and like, again, like you said, equally, I love Beyonce. I am a big Beyonce fan. I think she is just like amazing, doing so much for the world, et cetera, et cetera. She released Renaissance and she didn't really do anything after that. Like there were some videos. She didn't announce a tour until this past week. Harry, I went on, I saw him October 2021. Harry's House was about to come out. He was already performing singles from that album. And then he's been touring it and doing residencies for the last year and a half.
Still going.
So I'm kind of like, he's done so much promo for this. Sorry, my dog. He's done so much promo for like it all kind of coming to album of the year and that moment. So yeah, I felt bad. And fans also kept saying that they felt like he seemed really anxious and like uncomfortable through the night. I didn't really get that, but
I didn't get that vibe. I think the something that didn't really help for the argument of Harry winning was then when he did his speech, he clearly was so nervous and probably was like, oh my God, I just beat Beyonce and everyone's going to hate me. Like who knows what's going through his mind.
Right.
And when he worded his speech, he made that comment like, this doesn't happen to people like me very often. And like, I knew what he meant. He meant someone who's like coming from a small town and like was in like a boy band. And then who knew if they were ever going to become as famous as they did. And, you know, Right. Maybe does stuff that's a little against the grain. Like I get what he meant. Sure. It didn't translate well, especially in the situation going against Beyonce. And then people were giving him some like hard times about his performance, saying like he didn't sound great, which I didn't think it was that bad.
We've heard people sound a lot worse after covering a lot of these award shows.
Yeah. So like, I'm not taking anything away from Beyonce and I'm not going to stand on one side or the other of like who I thought should win. Cause like, I don't know, but
right.
I think that the reaction to him winning was unfair.
Completely agree. And now what people are trying to do with Adele, saying that she like got up and walked out. Like there's this viral TikTok video that she like got up and walked out and all this stuff. And so Lizzo who captured,
like,
she was like our videographer that night. Yeah. Like, oh, you want another angle of Beyonce here? And, and here's me and Adele cheering for Harry. And here's, but she gave the alternative view. Really what Adele was doing was getting up and moving over to go celebrate Harry with Lizzo, who was being like a great sport about it. And if we know anything about Adele, we know that like she feels like so humbly about awards that she's like, I think if Adele won, she would have gone like Katy Heron again and broken the award in half and just, or she just would have given it straight to Beyonce and been like, yours.
Yeah, especially because she beat Beyonce once in the past already. So she didn't want anything to do with that again.
I do think it's really wild that Beyonce has never won Album of the Year.
It is shocking. Like I get, like, I really feel like I can stand on both sides of this. Like I get what the Beyonce fans were saying on Twitter. Like, why is she the most awarded person in Grammy history, but she's never won the main awards?
Right.
It's very weird.
It's very weird. I saw someone quoted in Variety, one of the voters, and they were like, it kind of was almost like they were like against her for winning so much. Like they were like, she gets everything. It's always a production when her album comes out. Like she doesn't like need this type thing. And that was the response. And I was like, that's like shitty.
She does
like,
all that so that she can be well rewarded for it.
Exactly. And also if she is going to win in every other category, like that has to say something.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I don't know. It was very weird.
Interesting. It was weird and interesting. Yeah.
But all in all, I would say good show. My favorite performance of the evening was my woman, Brandi Carlile.
She was amazing. I feel it was so far in the beginning. I feel like people probably almost forgot, but no, she crushed it.
I know. And you know what little like touch of the show that I really loved was how they had somebody personal to the celebrities introduce them, or the performers introduce them for like the most part. So Brandy's little girls and wife introduced her. I loved how Luke Combs, the bar owner, where he was a bouncer, introduced they found him.
These random people. It was so perfect.
Yeah. I loved that.
That was a nice touch. And I feel like Brandy's was especially special because it was in the beginning. Like, I didn't even realize that that's what they were doing yet. So then I like really remembered that one.
Yeah. So I just thought it was like such a cute little thing.
Yeah.
So that's Grammys. Now we have another Sunday event this Sunday.
February.
The Super Bowl. I know. Well, our Super Bowl was the Grammys. And now this is like everyone else's Super Bowl, I guess.
Yeah.
But what are you looking forward to most? I feel like I can tell. I know.
I mean, it's got to be Rihanna. Like, again, am I like the world's biggest Rihanna fan buying all her albums the day they come out? No. But like, you got to be excited for a Rihanna halftime show. We've been waiting our whole lives for this. Yeah.
I will say I am really looking forward to Chris Stapleton doing Star Spangled Banner.
Yes. Well. Yeah.
He's going to crush it. And like, I'm just, he's so freaking good. But then Rihanna's halftime show, I've seen some rumors about who she's maybe going to bring out. Like, someone said something about Kesha. I was like,
The whole thing has really been kept kind of under wraps, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. And I was almost curious if she was going to do like, I mean, she has so many hits that she could just do it by herself, but it's a long time to do consistent by yourself, even though that's what J-Lo, I guess, wanted.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to bring that up from watching J-Lo's documentary, which I'm assuming you do too. It really gives you an idea of how much of their hearts these artists put into putting the show together. And so like, I think the fact that she's been working on this so hard for however many months now, and we haven't really heard anything about what she's has planned, is like just a testament to how big of a deal this is for them.
Yes. And we do know that Rihanna is so good at keeping things quiet. Like, her inner circle just must be like so small and tight lipped.
Yeah.
But I wonder, you know, if her baby's going to be there and if we're going to get a little glimpse of that, of him.
Yeah. Because she's just, even though she hasn't been putting music out, she still had so much going on. So like, like endless possibilities.
I know. And she has like a Fenty line that's dropping with it. I feel like it's going to be really celeb heavy.
Yeah. Yeah. Like a lot of like guests in attendance.
Yeah. Like Fenty's doing a press trip for the Super Bowl.
There you go.
So
and, like, it's in Phoenix. So it's like close enough to California. Like it's not.
And Adele said she was going just to see Rihanna.
Literally, say, like, me too, please bring me.
Yeah.
But then, of course, like, obviously there's a football game too.
I was going to say.
Let's not take that away from them. And like, it is nice. Like, I feel like working on like an entertainment / pop culture website, like there is like somewhat of that element to it. Like, you have Patrick Mahomes, who has him and his wife are, you know, they had 2 kids in 2 years and they're like always in the news now just for their relationship. So like, there is a pop culture element to that too, that I think we can get excited about.
Yes. And the Kelsey brothers,
yes,
they're going against each other. I know, they just did a cute little video that you, I saw you had sent in yesterday, or like,
they have a podcast and it's like super popular, and their parents came on the podcast this week and like, just like so supportive of each other. So one of the brothers is like married with kids, and like, I think the parents are kind of like gravitating towards the other one a little bit because he's single, and they're like, you won't have anyone to hang out with after the game. Like, we'll hang out with you.
He needs this.
He's the one who had a like that reality dating show on E! Like 6 years ago.
Yeah, I saw that. That like keeps coming up on TikTok for me. I was like, Travis had a dating show? Like, and he's still alone.
Oh, yeah. Man. But he's single now, so.
Single now. Ladies, most eligible bachelor of the Super Bowl.
Truly.
Well, speaking of Bachelor, you have been recapping the show this season. Tell me, like, biggest surprises. Like, why should people, continue to watch this show?
Okay. I think I've just been watching this for so long that I don't even know what like the mainstream public opinion each season is going into it. So when this one was starting and I was reading all the interviews and like seeing what people were saying, everyone was like, Zach's going to be the most boring bachelor ever. And I get it. Just another like attractive white guy football. Like, I get it. It's people thought it was going to be boring, but He is so charming, I think. I got to meet him like a few months before the show aired because there was like a press event or whatever. And he was so nice and charming. You could tell that he like, even with like random reporters, he was just like really taking the time to get to talk to people. And that like translates onto the show to me. He asks questions with the intention of actually caring what the people are saying back, as opposed to asking it because he knows he has to ask it.
Right, right.
And he keeps making a point to like say that he doesn't want to deal with drama, which they all say, but then they kind of like invite the drama in. And like, he is really like, the drama starts and then like, it's over. He ends the conversation with whoever it's involved. And then like, if he really thinks he has to send them home, he does. No explanation really needed because like, which is what happened last night. And then he's also just like honest with the people who he doesn't have a connection with. If someone's like, I feel like things are a little like not going great between us, he's like, you know what? I just don't feel it. I'm like, politely sends them home. So I've been pleasantly surprised so far, I will say.
Yeah. I mean, that's like exactly what it should be, right?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's not so hard to ask. That's what he's there to find love.
I know. Maybe because like I met him before, I just went in with like a really positive view of him. And I don't know if other people are going to give him this much credit, but I think the response has been fairly positive so far.
Yeah. I definitely haven't seen anything bad. And it's good that he's just like authentic, because that does come through. And if it doesn't come through on the show, it comes through afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, we'll find out.
I keep seeing Christina.
Right. So Christina Mandrell's aunt is Barb Mandrell, who's a famous country singer. Mm-hmm. And so going into the season, she was already going to be someone people were looking for. And she happened to be the lady who, you know, kind of stirred things up a bit in the first few episodes. And it was very interesting the way they edited it, because in last week's episode, I think from what I saw, a lot of the viewers were kind of like on her side. Like, a girl kind of complained to Zach about feeling uncomfortable because of one woman in the house. I respect her for not naming who the woman was, because she didn't want to cause trauma. She was just saying how she felt. But her reasoning, based on what we saw as a viewer, and like, not to invalidate what she felt, but like, her reasoning behind why she didn't like this woman, Christina, is because it was like Christina made a joking comment to her and she felt offended. It was very clearly a joke.
Okay.
And so like, the viewers were super team Christina last week. This week, it was like very flipped. You started seeing how like obnoxious a little bit her behavior really was. And it doesn't help that like, you're in this house with all these other girls. You're probably not eating your regular diet. You're drinking a lot. Like,
yeah,
it affected how she was acting. And I will say, she took the criticism from Zach fairly well. And she didn't like put up a fight when he eliminated her. Like, she understood. So yeah.
I'm sure it won't be the last we see of her, just because she's been super vocal on TikTok and Instagram. You know, she's really like playing through it, it feels like.
Yeah.
So
I'm sure they're already casting for Bachelor in Paradise. So
exactly. Yeah. I'm sure she'll be a hit.
Yeah, exactly. For sure. And yes, yeah, so you're right. She was definitely playing into that character persona, whatever you want to say. Like, she didn't care to be the one who was causing a little bit of the drama.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, at the end of our podcast, we always ask what you are, if you're like watching any content, reading anything, like anything that you are loving right now that you wanted to share.
Oh my God. Well, I might've posted this on Instagram. I don't know if you saw, but a book I read really recently that I loved was Wrong Place, Wrong Time by Jillian McAllister.
Love it.
So good. And like, I really wasn't expecting to like it because it's like kind of told backwards.
Yes.
So I was just like, I think I'm going to be too confused, but oh my God, it was so good.
So good.
And I know you're my fellow book queen. So I had to
say, Alyssa and I are big readers. I am in search of a new book right now, actually. So if anyone has recommendations,
that's been my favorite recently. And then if you need a TV show, I just watched Bad Sisters on Apple TV.
Oh, good.
So good. Watch it. Yeah.
Okay. I am still watching. Well, I just started season 3 of Emily in Paris. I had been putting it off because people were like, meh.
I mean, I watched it in like a day, but it's cheesy.
Yeah, it's cheesy. It's ambient watching, as my mom says. Good like background.
Exactly. You
know, whatever. It's not going to give you anxiety like Ginny and Georgia gave me anxiety.
Yeah.
So that's what I've been watching.
Well, Bad Sisters might give you a little anxiety. It's like you're trying to find out who killed someone.
Okay.
I got like a little bit of Big Little Lies, like that kind of vibes, like four or five women, like there's a mystery to solve situation.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like it. Apple TV. Okay.
Yeah. Check it out.
So we are leading into our interview segment, guys. Make sure you keep listening. I talked to Elisa Donovan, who starred in Clueless. She has a big Super Bowl commercial with Alicia Silverstone, and it's going to be epic. So make sure you guys stay tuned for the rest of the interview and watch the Super Bowl on Sunday and let us know what you think. Come back next Tuesday for another episode. Thanks, Elisa.
Of course. Bye.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I am so excited for my super special guest today. As a 90s baby, I watched her religiously on my television, from Sabrina the Teenage Witch to her role in Clueless. And we are going to have her back on our TV screens again. You might have seen the Super Bowl commercial, Clueless themed, for Rakuten. So I'm so excited to have here today, Elisa Donovan. Hello.
Hi, Allie. Thanks for having me.
Of course.
Nice to see another ginger.
Yes, I know. When we jumped on this Zoom, I kind of like did a double take. I was like, am I looking in the mirror? Am I looking at my future? Hello. but it's so great to have you on. So great to talk to a fellow redhead. Did you always like your red hair? Or was that like a point?
Well, when I was growing up, my hair was more reddish brown. And when I was young, it was more red. And then it turned more like an auburn kind of color. So I was never super strawberry or carrot toppy. And now I feel like, oh, I wish I was. But the people that I know that were like that, it was a little bit challenging.
Yeah.
We always get a bad rap.
Yeah. And I remember when I was like in middle school, that South Park episode came out with when gingers have no souls. And so it was like really, it was hard. It was hard for me.
Right. Someone just asked me yesterday in an interview about that, about why do you think that redheads are always portrayed as the bad girl, the mean girl, the devil, the bad neighbor, you know, someone. I don't know. I said it's probably goes back to some ancient thing of, you know, there was some super wise, really intuitive redheaded woman who they said, oh, she's too much. She's a witch.
She's so a witch.
Too.
I couldn't agree more. I really do feel that. I feel that in my redhead ancestry that we were witches. So,
but the it best is funny ways.
Redhead. And now it's like such a trend, like Kendall Jenner got red hair. So everybody was getting red hair. I was like,
oh my goodness. Oh.
Come on. but we are so excited to have you on, mostly to talk about this return to Clueless. You guys all got together with Alicia Silverstone, who returned to her iconic character of Cher for this Rakuten Super Bowl commercial. Tell me a little bit about how this came to be.
So in the fall, I was approached by Rakuten, and they said, we are doing a Super Bowl spot, and it will be you and Alicia, and you will be it's an homage to the debate scene in the film. And I said, are they serious? Are we really going to do a Super Bowl commercial? And it turns out, yes, they were serious. And the script is so clever and so sweet. And, you know, we get approached. I can only imagine how often Alicia is approached, but I certainly do get approached quite often to do something related to it or to do, you know, some sort of Clueless-esque thing. And nothing ever really seems quite right. But this was such a great opportunity for us and so much fun and so cute and really, really clever. And Rakuten is it's the perfect marriage for Clueless. I mean, it's a shopping app
where you receive money back when you buy things. I mean, Amber would be all over it. And to not have to leave your house to do as little work as possible and buy some high fashion and receive money back in return. I mean, what could be better?
Yeah.
So it was really the perfect, the perfect timing and the right product.
And it's so funny, like when you think back to Cher's closet that she would, you know, swipe through, and that was so forward thinking at the time. And now it's like, oh, we can do that right on.
Really do it.
You know,
yep.
Right on our apps, and it works so well. So it's so funny to kind of look back at that and laugh. How was it getting back into the character of Amber? Because even for a short clip, you kind of had to kind of get back in that mindset.
Yes. I mean, I have to say it was either disturbingly or pleasantly easy. It was pretty, I think Alicia and I both felt that way. It was just sort of, it's something that is so ingrained, certainly in me, that character. I mean, I also played that character for 3 years on the TV show. So it's really imprinted on me. Mm-hmm. So I did have to go back and look at clips from that scene to make sure that I was not inventing in my mind what I remembered.
Right, right.
It was super fun. And, you know, we walked on the set and it is almost an exact replica of that scene from the film. So that was really fun to see the attention to detail they had. And Bill Pope, who was a cinematographer on the film, shot the commercial. And I adore Bill. He was just so kind back then. I really felt like, oh, he's such a father figure to me on the set. It was my first movie, and he just was so kind and so brilliant. And so that was a really special, extra special piece that he was a part of it.
That's so special. Do you, you said you went back and watched some clips. Have you, and do you go back to watch the film time to time?
No.
Well, I know you have a daughter, so I wasn't sure if you were like, watch this movie with me, or if she's like not there yet.
I mean, first of all, she does not think I am cool at all. And I still think she's a little bit young for Clueless. I'm a bit of a more conservative mom in that way. I just think maybe in a couple year or two she'll watch it, but I have only seen the film in its entirety 3 times. And once was at a test screening, so before the film even came out, with Alicia, Paul, Donald, Christian, sorry, I just don't know his character's name, Justin, and I all sat in the back row of this theater with a test audience. So I saw it then, and I was late for the premiere because I was shooting 90210. So I didn't see it then. Oh, and I saw it in the theater once. And then I saw it, there was a screening that I hosted in LA a couple of years back at the Mondrian. So really, I've only seen it 3 times.
Wow.
That's why I don't remember it as much as everybody else.
Right. When people like quote to your face, you're like, maybe like, that was in there.
So.
That could have been in
right.
That movie. But this leads right into this kind of somewhat of a reunion that leads into a full reunion that you're going to be having with Alicia and Stacey Dash at the 90s con that's coming.
Yes.
Up. Really fun. Tell me a little bit about how that came to be and why it felt right, you know, in just what you were saying about things, you know, good for you.
I mean, I think there's, you know, it's funny, this, it was all very, everything was embargoed and assigning NDAs to do this commercial. We weren't allowed to talk about it. And I don't know, there's something in the zeitgeist or the whole vibe of things that my manager started getting approached to do all of these appearances for things. And I thought, did somebody spill the beans and not think,
right.
But I do really think it is just because there's such a love for and a nostalgia for the 90s right now. And so it just felt like, I mean, the three of us have not, I don't think we've ever, I mean, we've certainly never done something like this together. So It's going to be really fun. I mean, we were kids, you know, we were young. And so there's so much life that's happened. We've had kids, husbands, jobs, moving to places, you know, there are so many life changes that have happened since then that it's been, you know, shooting the commercial was really surreal and very fun in that way to come at the character from an adult perspective. And it was just really fun.
Yeah. It seems like it was. And just also to kind of be in the same, the costumes, the outfits, to see her in that Dolce & Gabbana plaid was very nostalgic. Why do you think that the movie continues to kind of withstand the test of time?
I think for a couple of reasons. One, it's just an incredibly well-made film. The script is so brilliant and so funny, but so good-spirited and smart. Every area of the film came together so beautifully, from the costumes to the set deck to everything, and the cast, obviously. And so I think when you do something that touches into this universality of being a teenager and tapping into it in a way that is without harsh judgments, it's sort of really just bringing to the table exactly what it's like. And there's something I think that everyone could connect to. And it's just really funny. And I think that those things just stick with you. And when the dialogue is so succinct and so smart, I think it lends itself to people quoting it all the time and, you know, just enjoying the film together. So I think it's a combination of things.
Yeah. Give me one second. My dog is eating my charger right now.
Oh, okay.
So pop into that. I'm sorry. He is really distracting me. Come here. Oh, sorry. Okay. Stay right here. Okay. I have like a 7-month-old puppy and he is discovering new things right now. He just hopped up on the chair in front of me. I'm like, what are you doing? Okay. Anyway. So back to our conversation. So for the 90s con, what do you expect that the three of you will be doing? Obviously meeting with fans, and there will be a panel, but, will you be getting into character, or it's kind of going to be who you are now?
Oh, I don't think we're getting into character. I was not informed of that. I'm pretty sure that we're all going as ourselves.
Yeah.
But we'll be taking pictures and signing autographs and doing a panel for sure. So, I mean, I've never done
something
like this before. I did do Comic-Con once with the Sabrina cast. Mm-hmm. And that was so overwhelming.
Oh, it's a lot of people. Yeah.
But it was fun, you know, and it's always fun to get back together and to, you know, it's really special to be a part of something that has made people so happy for so many years. I mean, it's awesome. So it's nice to be able to give back to people in some way. So it'll be fun.
Yeah. So in the meantime, you also are working on the film of your book, Wake Me When You Leave, your super successful book. It sold out in the first 3 days. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about making your life story into, you know, giving it the Hollywood treatment. Was that the plan, or is that just a surprise to you?
So the plan, I never really, initially I did not think about it as a film at all. I always wanted to write it as a book. And because I'm an actress, I was told just make it a movie or write a play. And I didn't want to do those things. And then I did wind up writing it as a one-woman show that I did as a benefit for the Big Brothers Big Sisters Foundation. And I performed it at the Geffen Theater in LA. And then I went, and it was really so well received, and people were laughing and crying and having all of the responses that I had so deeply hoped that it would bring. And from that moment, I felt it really shifted things for me. And I said, this is what I want to do with my life. Not only this piece, but this kind of work. I want to do projects and things that have this sort of effect on people where mm-hmm. it's really meaningful and deep and inspires conversations. And so that prompted me to really write it as the book. And it took a while to get that together. And then I started to write it as a film at the same time, but I got the book deal first. And so I was writing the book during the pandemic, which is a whole other absurd story. Trying to write the book, you know, I signed the contracts what turned out to be the last day of school for my daughter in 2020. And, you know, the publisher said, so your first deadline will be June 1st. And this was March, I don't know, 13th, something like that. And I said, sure. I mean, that's not a problem. I'm really fast and she'll be back in school in 2 weeks. And my husband will be back at the office in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And of course we all know that didn't happen. So that turned into me writing in essentially the laundry room because my husband was his day. We built a stand-up desk. He was working in the guest room. My daughter's homeschooling in her room. It was an absolute circus. And, but because I cared so in many ways, this book saved me. It gave me such a purpose and a sense of groundedness. And I felt like I'm doing something that's meaningful. And it just really helped relieve a lot of the anxiety and stress of that time. So I got the book deal first and then I went back to the film and, I partnered with a producer whom I had worked with as an actress, and he has done many Sundance films, you know, Sundance winning films, and he's super experienced and loves the project. And we started to put a cast together with people that we started with people that we both know. And it's just, I'm so excited. We're putting together a great group. And right now we are raising the finances for it.
Amazing. So
I'm hopeful that will all come together this year, the finances, and then we're ready to go. But so I'm not going to be in it. I'm directing it.
Okay.
Yeah. And someone else will be playing me, a younger version of me.
A younger version of you. Tell me about like the weight of finding somebody to play you. Did you have somebody in mind when you were coming up with this, or how did that work for you?
Well, yes, but then we had to change things along the way. We've changed the ages. There are a lot of things that have shifted. It's been in development for a year and a half now, or 2 years. And so we keep shifting things around. And now the main piece of that being the age of the main character. Right. And so now she's going to be a little bit younger. This takes place when I was 30. And originally she was going to be in her early 30s. And then we had to then think about the parents and what age they would be. And the person playing the dad is a really pivotal part of it. And it's someone, one of the first people that signed on to it. And he is on the younger side. So we had to change and find a young actress. And we found this, oh, she's so good. And, you know, you have to find somebody who's in that place of they're not hugely famous yet. They haven't kind of had their moment. And we would like this to be her moment.
Yes.
And so we've been pretty meticulous and I'm really excited about her. She read the script and had these incredibly articulate and thoughtful things to say about it and why she cared about it and what she thought she could bring to it. And it encouraged me so much. It made me feel like some young people really do care.
Yeah. You
know, they care about the craft of acting. They care about literature. They care about, you know, meaningful things. And so she is just a real treat. Yeah.
Yeah. I definitely think that can be lost sometimes, especially when you like look at like younger content and the generation, you know, all of that.
Yes. So I thought, is she going to have the attention span to read the whole script? But it was very clear that she did. Yes.
Yes. And, you know, I think that somebody handling your story and being entrusted to tell it in how you visualize it is a really heavy weight. So you need to, you know.
Right. It is. And when you're making independent films, small films, it really is a labor of love and everyone has to show up 100% every day because you don't have the luxury of extra days and extra time and unlimited resources. So you really, I mean, you always become a family or a dysfunctional family on a set, one or the other. But in these sorts of cases, I think they really, you really, there's an intimacy that happens and that's kind of required. So we have to be mindful of that when in bringing the cast together. But so far, everybody that reads it really just wants to be a part of it, which feels so good. Feels nice.
Well, and it seems like, you know, you've done several things already and kind of flexing that director muscle, but are you really excited to kind of be behind the camera?
Oh, yes.
Visual.
Right. Oh my gosh. I feel like this is kind of my life's work. It's like my baby, and I would love to direct more in the future, but I really feel like this is the right thing for me to start with because I have such an idea. I have such a vision for the whole film that it's, you know, I've been on sets for almost 30 years. Right. And when you do series television, if you're paying attention at all, you learn so much. And I would ask so many questions about where cameras were and why they were there. And much like, I soaked it all up. And I'm just really excited to put all of that onto the screen. And also it'll be nice to go to work and not have to be in hair and makeap.
Yes. Oh my God.
That'll be a real treat.
I want to be in your like pony up.
Yes.
Let's
never get out of my sweats. Like the way you show up to work as an actor, I'll be able to stay that way the whole day.
Exactly. And it's such an incredible story that you have and you are telling through, you know, just, it's a very interesting look at Hollywood that people haven't necessarily seen before. So
yeah. And it's really about the juxtaposition of the facade of an actor's life and the things that we really are experiencing at the same time. And, and the bigger piece of this is really about when we lose someone that we love, they don't really leave us. They're always with us. And it's about that connection after someone passes away and these dreams that my father came to me in and these otherworldly kinds of experiences that really helped me to heal and to rejoin life because it was a really dark period. And often the majority of the time, it can be very isolating when you're going through these kinds of challenges. And because we're really not comfortable culturally talking about difficult things, talking about grief and talking about loss and sadness. And so I really wanted this to be a bridge for people and a way for people to connect and also allow them to share their feelings. And, you know, along with that, it's also very funny. I mean, the book is very funny too, because that's what life is. It's all of the pieces, you know, it's not all any one thing. And right next to the sadness, there are hilarious things that happen. And it's just the absurdity of what it is to be human. And that really interests me.
Yeah, that like life keeps on living, like when you feel like you're in this pit of grief. And absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so you said that I'm just tracking back to this. You said you wrote this during the pandemic in your laundry room. And this really does sound like, you know, when you're writing through these things, you're kind of living through it all over again and you're working through it all over again. So how was that for you? Like mentally going through 2020 itself.
Yeah.
And then, you know, writing this really pivotal, piece on your life.
You know, it was very bizarre, I will say. I mean, I had obviously to get the book deal, I had a draft of the book and it wasn't complete, but I had several chapters and an outline and all of that. So I had so much material on my computer already that I was able to, and I had processed so much of it emotionally because it had happened years before. In the process of really writing it and revising it, once I was working with the publisher, it was such a pleasant experience for me because I felt like in some way the entire world was grieving, right? Everybody was going through this feeling of a loss of their livelihood and life, and where are we going and what does this mean? And no one could understand what was happening at first. Mm-hmm. And so in a weird way, I felt this sort of communal support for what I was doing. And it just also felt like it was meaningful and it really mattered. And it allowed me, I think, to be even more vulnerable in the writing of it, because I felt like that's what people will connect with
and want. Wow, that is such a great story. Is there anything else that you are working on right now that you wanted to make sure we brought up and chatted about today before I let you go?
No, I mean, I think that's it, which is the film that we're trying to get off the ground here. And I am going to be starting another book, but I have not. There are two different directions I can go, and I haven't quite figured out which one is going to.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Win.
Okay.
So I'm excited for that, because that's one of my favorite processes. Writing is such it's heavenly for me. So
Are you hoping that is going to be fiction, or is that a memoir?
Well, that's the thing. I'm deciding, is it going to be a continuation of sort of where this book ends, or is it going to be fiction, or is it going to be a combination, which is what I feel is sort of going to be. Going to be based on what happens after the end of this book, but then fictionalizing it.
Awesome. Amazing, Elisa. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us. And when that book comes out, when your movie comes out, come on back to the podcast, because we would love to have you chat all about it.
All right. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Of course. All right. Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye.